I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today we're speaking with Curtis Goodwin, co-founder of the New London Talent Show and co-producer of Those People, a film that premieres this Thursday at the Guard Theater in New London.
The city was being torn apart.
The community was debating what the appropriate reaction is to having a murder in the heart of the city.
I'm angry.
I'm frightened.
You guys strengthen the things that are negative, and you don't bring light to the good.
Everybody complains when something happens, and we have a couple meetings, and then it stops.
Good morning, Curtis, and welcome. Can you first tell me what are some of your favorite scenes from this film and what people should be looking for on Thursday night?
Of course. Well, good morning and thank you for having me. Some of my favorite scenes, is it fair to say all of them? There's really so many scenes. I mean, we start in the beginning of actually how the talent show came about, you know, when we start discussing, you know, the tragic murder that existed. And, you know, we end on obviously a more upbeat note and tell you more of the storylines in their lives and how they transformed. There's just so many stories in there. It's hard to pick a favorite. I mean, just imagine doing hundreds of kids over the course of 10 years being in the show and then trying to pick which one get interviewed for this film to tell their backstory. It was extremely tough. One that sticks out to me, oh, it's hard to even pick. I don't feel like I'm not allowed to have favorites. But one of them is Marco, who was a homeless addict. That was brought here. And as you know, New London is a place that everyone who's anyone in any city drops off their young adults here for our services that exist here. And it's overwhelming. But this one, this story, this transformational story is just one that makes me feel proud of not only the talent show's role in his life, but also New London's role in Southeastern Connecticut.
And that's Marco Fabretti, and his talent is the spoken word.
It's the spoken word. He came to us as a rapper, as you guys will learn. And I worked with him to kind of slow it down and transition him into spoken word. And it's a phenomenal pieces that he's done.
Curtis, let's go back a little bit to the homicide involving six young men from the city and the victim, Matthew Chu. That didn't sit right with you in so many ways, and you thought, let's do something positive.
Yeah, that was really troubling to know that a murder existed, and for the reason that they gave, which was boredom, you know, on so many different layers, it bothered me. Well, why were these kids bored? Who's at fault? Because I truly believe it takes a village, and, you know, we're all a part of that village. And then for the young kid, Matthew Chu, his life was lost. And, you know, his last words and just him being alone, for me personally, it's tough for me because I've experienced my own traumatic experiences with stuff like that. But just on a holistic level, it just bothered me. The idea of doing a talent show was actually not mine. It was my co-founder of mine, Frank Colmenares, who came up with the idea of a talent show, challenging the guard on the spot in these meetings to, you know, theoretically let us use the building, saying, why does this sit dormant when we have a need that youth need to use these facilities? Let's get them in here. And then he partnered with me because I have production background and produced shows since I was around 14 years old. And then here we are 10 years later.
So you've got this institutional knowledge of the city that helped you make this happen. Yes. And some kind of ability to bring people together. How did you lay awake at night thinking, what am I going to do? And how can we do this? And then when you realized, you and Frank realized this was happening, did you have aha moments?
I think the aha moment came when I was in the front, because mind you, I didn't have the historic knowledge just then. I'm just really good at production and marketing. The day we sold out or oversold the guard and the police were like, we're going to have to shut down. You have to put the babies on laps and this. That's when it became surreal. Like, wow, this has not only had a positive impact, people actually have a need and a desire to want to sit in these seats and to cheer on the youth and their talent. And that's when it was like, for me, it became a challenge. What can I do with this energy?
What year was that you oversold the guard?
2011.
So was that year one?
That was year one, 2011. We started up literally directly about 3 months after the Matthew Chu incident, we got started. And then 2011 was the first show that March.
As a journalist who's covered the talent show, it's really cool to go, you know, backstage and see all the preps that's going on. Can you describe that sort of controlled chaos?
Yeah, I love that. Controlled chaos. That's exactly what it is. For me, it's beautiful. I love chaos and I love controlled chaos. But you have, you know, young artists, older artists, black, white, Puerto Rican, transgender, gay, straight, male, female, all back there, all for the same reasons, under a very tight corners, getting along, enjoying themselves, and all sharing common experiences of being nervous to go perform in front of a sold out stage. Like, for me, that is beautiful to see back there, to see all that energy, and then to know that I'm a part of pushing it and them getting a chance to express it to a greater audience. It's like, wow, you actually get to follow energy from point A to point B.
And was there a moment when you realized that you were really making a difference in the lives of the young people? And what was that moment?
Yes and no. So I'm aware of what I'm doing and how it's helping, but in the 10 years of producing the talent show, I never took a moment to self-reflect or to actually take in and absorb what it is I was manifesting. Now, post-pandemic, you know, pandemic really gave all of us some time to actually internalize and to realize what's important in our life, what could we not go without. And during that time, I was able to really reflect and see, now that I'm not doing the talent show during the pandemic, wow, I've really changed lives, because you have those acts reaching back to me saying, what is it you're going to do next? What is it we can do? But really quickly, I got a phone call just yesterday. And there was a woman that called me and said, I don't want you to feel like you're alone in this, because I'm sure in everything you do, it doesn't seem like you like to take the credit or be center stage, but you're doing so much. And I don't think the community understands it takes a village. And then she proceeds to tell me a story of, she was phone banking for Anthony Nolan, who's the state rep here. And she made a phone call to one particular gentleman who happened to be in the film and also in the talent show, Nelson Chalas, who's actually in Brooklyn, New York. So she made a phone call to him, and this Nelson didn't know her. She didn't know him. And he proceeded to describe his experience within the talent show and how welcoming it was, how much of a family it provided, but also how he could feel content and comfortable in his own skin, and how that's translated into him, you know, working and dancing as a professional dancer in New York City, performing for the Brooklyn Nets. But she really got a chance to help me sit and rationalize and wrap my head around, wow, the impact I've made on him, for him to share his story with a complete stranger. I mean, just think about, you know, us as individuals. We get a phone call from someone phone banking, can you donate to such and such who's running for Congress? And we're like, click. But, you know, him as a young person actually answered the phone and proceeded to tell this stranger this story of how two men, myself and Anthony Nolan, impacted his lives. And, you know, it brought me to tears, to be honest. I never heard the story, and there were some things that he revealed that I wasn't that aware of. So for him to feel comfortable enough to share it to a stranger, and for him to express himself and to be performing on big stages, you know, that's powerful. And that's when you really start to say, wow, I'm making an impact.
That's amazing. And so not only was the impact on the performers, it was also on the community at large, I think. Was there a moment then that you thought, the people on the outside now see that those people are us, that, you know, a community moment?
I think that is an evolving and ongoing conversation. That dialogue is never supposed to stop. And I think that's hopefully what the end of the movie challenges people to understand. One, to understand that we are all those people at some point in time, or all of our lives, rather. But two, that it's important that we realize dialogue cannot stop, conversation cannot stop, thinking outside of the box cannot stop. We haven't got to the point where we accomplish, we can all sit in harmony and in unison and break bread, as we've seen in the world that we live in on a national scene, but it doesn't mean we can't get there in our own unique communities.
I believe that there's moments that really like change your life. And the talent show is definitely one of those moments.
Everybody out there wants to have a chance to be the talent show basically legit like saved my life. But I would have probably been in jail or probably be dead.
So Curtis, if you'll indulge me for a second in a little personal side to this whole project, I think it's one of the cruelest ironies that I've ever seen is that here you are doing something incredibly positive for the young people in the wake of Matthew Chu's murder, and then tragedy hits your own home, and your younger brother is fatally stabbed in the city. How did that change your work?
It's always tough talking about that. I didn't realize it would be so tough when asked on the spot. As you can see, it still rocks me. So I'm empathetic to what, you know, Matthew Chu's parents went through, because still to this day it rocks me to the core. You know, no one wants to go through what I feel is a senseless murder like that. And you know, for it to just happen and it just becomes the norm. You know, when people of color in the city of New London or even in other cities, you know, get murdered, it's kind of a thing of the norm. You know, we're there for the first few weeks or first few days rather, and then it's a RIP or SIP, sleep in peace, rest in peace type of feel. For my brother, I'd like to feel like I carry him, my ancestors, Matthew Chu, on the backs of my shoulders and the things that I do. So I use that strength or that sadness, that sorrow. And for me, I translate that into energy. It's like, you know, taking potential into kinetic energy. So I use my own trauma, my traumatic experiences and my adversity to my advantage.
And I should add that you are now counselor, Goodwin. Is that a surprise that somebody who had worked a certain angle of the city is suddenly one of the government now? I mean, can you justify that and tell me how that is working out for you?
For me personally, it's not too much of a surprise. I grew up as class president. I served class president from eighth grade to my senior year. So I always had a desire to be in leadership. That desire to become in leadership was from my younger self. So I remember being young and I lived in 93 State Pier Road, which is, you know, the low income, the high rise, the ghetto, whatever you refer to it as. And I remember saying, I will not spend the rest of my life here. I will not be a part of the stereotypes, the narratives, the labels. Nor this label of at risk. And I looked in my surroundings and I just remember yesterday saying, I will drive this, I will live in this, and I will not be here, but I will always be able to come back and influence it. And I kept that promise to myself. So as I progressed in life, I always found myself in situations where I had to elevate, you know, my status or my means, but two, where I was in a place where I need to figure out how to give back or what are the mechanisms or the systems that keep us in poverty. You know, poverty begets poverty. And I slowly realized in my life, doing talent show and doing so many different things, when I would go to ask to use a facility or to use a building or to get a permit or to do this, I faced a lot of challenges in 10 years just keeping the show alive. It wasn't like I was getting help from city government or getting funding or learning how to, you know, do permits or anything. I had to figure this out in real time or with Google on my own. And in doing such, hearing those no's drive me insane. So anytime I hear a no, something in my mind clicks and says, okay, I need to figure out how to change that into a yes. And I realized I needed to get in government, even if it was just for a short stint. I would do as much as I could in that short stint to change lives and also to get people to view government, one, as a vehicle so that we don't oppress people and we don't contribute or perpetuate systemic, you know, racism and things of that nature. But two, understanding our role and our power in making sure we influence government to do what's best for all of us. And for me, it's always about the youth. So getting in government was more so of my, you know, thank you to the youth for encouraging me and inspiring me, but also my give back to them.
As you were growing up and deciding that you were going to live here and drive that and be this and become a leader, were there people that served as the type of role model that you are serving as right now?
Not consistently. I didn't have anyone consistently in my life, to be honest. I had some really rough times in my life. But I did have moments where people did leave, you know, little hints, little treasures, little things that stuck with me to today. Two incidents come to mind was, you know, Anthony Nolan. At one point in time, I was actually homeless year one of doing the show, which no one actually knows. I actually lived in my car. the first year of doing the talent show. And Nolan was very vital. I mean, through a lot of my life, Nolan was there. Also, our new current acting chief of police, Captain Wright, there was an incident. So I was involved in a domestic dispute where I was the victim. I know I'm 6'1", but I was the victim in this domestic dispute. But I just remember Captain Wright coming to me, and I was in the hospital. I had actually been stabbed, and he had come to the hospital and he sat with me and said, you know, you can come to me at any time and we can figure this out together. And that moment to this day has just stuck with me. So there's moments where, you know, people have dropped in my life and they have lasted. Those memories have, you know, influenced who I am today.
So everything is so much more complex, Curtis, than appears on the surface, right? And Anthony Nolan, also, you know, a leader in government, but a police officer, and Captain Wright, captain, acting police chief now, Brian Wright, both, of course, both men of color, right, that have a serious interest in the youth. How did you reconcile then, and we're getting a little bit off the subject, but not too far, how did you reconcile last summer's protests and, you know, recognizing that there are good guys among the police? Like, how do you say, on one hand, these guys really helped me to become who I am, but some things about the police are hurting me and other people of color? You know, what goes on in Curtis's head, you know, overnight when you're trying to figure this out?
Literally, it was an overnight thing of, what am I going to do tomorrow when I woke up to this protest and I don't know which way it's going to go? One, being, you know, in a position where police have abused their power. And then two, being an advocate for our good police, and a strong advocate for newer police that are community-oriented police. You know, it's a tough situation to be in. It reminds me of the first time we introduced the police coming to deliver pizza to the kids in the talent show. That was a tough exchange. I mean, in hindsight, it was a beautiful thing that we were able to accomplish. But just imagine bringing kids together from all these different backgrounds and all those different layers that you have to provide the safe space in. And now you want to introduce another level where the cops are not seen as good guys to these young kids, especially the ones of color. And they're going to be apprehensive. But in that situation, I chose to do it because it was a challenge and I knew the greater good, the bigger message. And I would be there to provide the youth, you know, a way forward, a way to the light. So the same thing as, you know, I was a city councilor when these protests happened, and I knew it was up to me as a leadership role. That's my role in council, to, you know, be firsthand in dealing with the community at large, especially most of them being my peers. I was out there actually in front helping to ease the tension on the police, to give them a chance to not only respond, but also collect themselves, because the youth were about to march in the streets. So I was out there as kind of a conduit or a wedge or a bridge, rather, in between the protest and the actual police. And there's pictures, and you can see me literally taking a lot of heat from folks that looked like me. But in doing so, we didn't have the outcome that other cities had that were so much more tragic. Cities, you know, torn apart, you know, looted and all those other things. Fortunately, with nearly 10,000 people marching our streets, the aftermath was, you know, next to nothing. So even if I played a small part in that, that's my mindset. How can I get to the outcome that I'm looking to get to?
That's great. And let's lighten up a little bit by talking about pizza. I know that I've heard that you literally fed these kids maybe one of the only meals that they were going to eat, or good meals, during the practices. And it sounds like that's something that really is significant for you. How did it work out that the cops were bringing pizzas to the performers?
One of the principals at Benny Dover actually introduced me to the idea of doing that, and said, hey, just try this out. This could be a nice new way to bridge the gaps between police. And also, one person I did forget that's been a mentor for the last quite a few years has been Susan Connolly, retired a lawyer, who's also named as T. Huggy in the film. So just look for T. Huggy in the film. She's very pivotal in this storyline. She is a great advocate for youth. If you don't know her, you either missed out or should get to know her. As a family lawyer, she just was a vital piece of the puzzle for Talent Show and us, myself as director, understanding these vital layers and food. Being deprived of food is one of the things that we oftentimes don't think enough about. And there were so many of our kids that didn't came to us on a Sunday that didn't eat. You know, they didn't eat from either the night before, or they were transitioning or ran away from their foster home and they were trying to find another home. We were literally dealing with kids of this nature. I mean, as I said earlier, Marco was homeless. My first meal with Marco, I remember we went out to eat and he hadn't been out to eat in God knows how long. And he was licking his fingers and licking the plate. My first time out to eat with him, I'm like almost mortified. Like, why are we doing this? What do you mean you've never been out to eat? And at the same token, he's like, he used that line in his poem about me bringing him to eat and what that meant for him. And that was one of the biggest chills I've received to date. Just him taking that experience and me getting to, through his poetry, understand the effect that it had on him. That was really, really powerful. So yeah, Susan Connolly is another one that helped me understand the needs of our kids. She was very good at getting to know the kids. I mean, you have a white lawyer who's named T. Huggy, which is her rap name. She knows how to break bread and to, you know, build that trust with the youth to better understand, you know, what's happening inside and at home. So we understand what traumas or troubles or needs they have when they enter our building so we can continue that safe space.
So you're doing way more than just putting together a performance.
Right.
Yeah.
Much, much more.
I've taken you all over the map, and I thank you for this indulgence. Curtis, is there anything else that you want to add about the show, about the premiere, about your work as a counselor?
No more about my work as a counselor, though I'm extremely grateful to have served on council. I know the youth look up to me, and I'm super involved in youth when it comes to council. So I'm just proud that I'm able to be a counselor, a director, and release this film all at once. That's something unheard of as a black male. So yes, I'm proud of being a counselor. But I do want to say, please, one, come out and see this film. I'm not just saying it because I'm producing it or because it's a community show. I just truly think it's something that every person, no matter where you are, no matter what walk of life you are in, it is something that you need to see at least once. It's something that'll open your mind to the person down the street, the person who's bagging your groceries, the person you overlook as you're driving by at a stoplight, the person begging for money. All these different interactions that we either have or don't have are vital to the world that we are going to live in the future and the world that we're going to give future generations. It's really a moment that you'll take to reflect and to feel challenged of what's your personal connection to the community you're in and how will you be a change agent within it, whether small, whether large. We think of this idea, this notion of being a mentor, something that's, oh my gosh, it takes so much time, it takes so much resources. It could take 2 seconds to say hello and change someone's life. You know, Captain Wright, you know, letting me know that he had an open door for me, still, what, 10 years later, still resonates with me and it helps me to be a better person. So it doesn't take much to be a change agent or to be a mentor. So long story short, come view the film on this Thursday. It's only $5. It was purposely to be $5 because if you have the means, donate a ticket to somebody else. And it's completely affordable to any and everyone. So I just hope you guys come to enjoy this film. I'm just really proud of this. And I want to thank The Day newspaper, especially Peter, for his incredible time, resources, and dedication to this film. Because, you know, that's a whole nother layer. You know, the media and me as a private citizen coming together to do a film of this nature. It's just a blessing. And I'm super proud and grateful.
I would be remiss if I didn't say the tickets are $10 at the door. So try to get them ahead of time. You can do that online at The Guard. Thank you so much, Curtis. And I will be thinking about Matthew Chu and Trayvon Brown, your brother, all of the good things that have happened to in their names when I watch this film.
Thank you very much. If you let them, then they're
liable to silence you. We could have been the stereotype. We could have been those people and fit the mold. The true measure of a person is how they respond to the negative things, how they respond to tragedy. And this is our response.
This place destroys fear, destroys it, and empowers young people.